Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We also invite your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address, at jewishsacredaging.com. And if you want to, you can leave a voicemail message for us on the website. And we appreciate your continued support for the growth of these podcasts and Jewish Sacred Aging. And if you'd like to make a donation, if you go to the website and click on the donate icon at the top of the page, that will take you to where you need to go. So thank you in advance. And for today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, let us welcome to the microphone Rabbi Chaim Herring from Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, author, presenter, futurist, and the author of a recently published book, Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim, welcome to Seekers of Meaning. How you doing?
Fine. Thank you very much, Richard. And I don't want to frighten any family members. I actually reside in Minneapolis.
Did I say Chicago?
Close enough.
I'm sorry. For some reason, I must have been...
Because I have grandchildren in Chicago.
That's why. It's the sacred grandparent connection. So I do apologize, you know, to Minneapolis, a wonderful city. Some good friends of mine live there. But welcome. And hope it's springtime and lovely. We're recording this in May. It has yet to be spring in southern New Jersey. So we're waiting patiently. Anyway, but thank you for joining us, Chaim. And Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Let's get right to the tachlis here. If somebody wants to get a hold of this book, where do they go?
Amazon is the easiest location.
Why did you write this?
I was a congregational rabbi from 1985 through 1995 in Minneapolis at Beth El Synagogue. And no one ever told me that a given day might look like telling stories to preschool children in the morning and ending the evening with an adult study group sandwiched in between with teaching B'nai Mitzvah kids or doing a book group for those who are seniors. And it already back then, I became interested in understanding how I could connect with each of the different generations. That was the genesis of my interest.
So, the congregational rabbinate is, you never know when you wake up in the morning what you're going to get. Even when you sit down at your desk in the morning, you don't know. And that's part of the fun of it. I get it with a quotation around fun. The book is, we're going to walk through this book because it's a fascinating book. Very, very well done. I wish you really good luck with it.
Thank you.
Talk to me about this jigsaw puzzle metaphor that you begin with. It's really kind of interesting.
So let's now spiral forward decades later. And what had become the kernel of an interest has become a full-blown, intense passion or obsession almost, as I see generations drift further apart from one another. And the jigsaw puzzle was, I was hearing parallel conversations with those who were seniors and up saying, I don't need to lead or be in charge anymore, but I still feel like I want to be productive and have something to contribute. Younger people are polite to me, but I don't have an organic way to connect with them. In doing some volunteer teaching with teens and those who were in college, I heard almost the exact same remarks. I know that I'm young. I may not have a lot of experience, but it's certainly not cool to talk to your parents at that age. Teachers are too busy testing, and this is not the fault of teachers at all. But those people who used to be more available, teachers, youth group workers, rabbis, clergy, not available. And I heard the same thing from these teens. Why won't anybody listen to me? And trying to connect the dots and then realizing that it wasn't only them, but how isolated we had become within our own peer cohort made me think we've got an opportunity to restore connections.
So in that beginning, and you sort of like, if I remember correctly in reading the book, you really do come down to this whole concept, which is part of the language now and emerging, of the importance, power, and presence of relationships. Correct?
That is correct. And I would say that there are a couple of new challenges. I know, as you do, every generation thinks somehow its struggles are different. And we can probably go back to Herodotus, I think, who talked about the good old days and what's happened to the youth of today. That's not really my mindset. I think that we've always had generation gaps, but there are two key differences today. One, we don't really have a playbook for having so many generations in significant numbers alive at one time. So my mentor is still my rabbi, Cass Abelson. He was only a kid when I interviewed him. I think that he was about 92 at the time. And my grandchildren, their generation doesn't have a name yet. Generation Alpha is being tossed around. That's seven generations. So where is our experience in dealing with so many generations? We have a multi-generational mindset, meaning we are very good at dividing, even within congregations, youth budget, adult learning budget, seniors budget. Where's the intergenerational line? The other new factor is that feeling of disequilibrium that we all have. I know that disruption, it doesn't discriminate by age. So whether you're 18 or 80, given how quickly things are changing, we tend to hunker down more instead of reach out more.
So you talked about, I mean, that this intergenerational stuff, and certainly in the work we do at Jewish Sacred Aging, we talk about this all the time. Every time I go out to a congregation or do a consult, this always comes up because the baby boomers, thanks to our parents' generation who really pushed the envelope, we really now expect to live right into our 80s and 90s and really beyond. And we're much more active in the intergenerational stuff, even with the caregiving. But yet you point out throughout the book, this, as other people have, this epidemic of isolation. You give these just certain, I think you cite certain surveys that one survey had 43% of people over the age of 50 report being alone or isolated or feeling that way. Another survey, 55%. And then you have this line which says, quote, social isolation predicts lifespan, unquote. So in this siloing, in this multi-generational world, in this modern world, and attempting to bridge the divide, talk to me a little bit about what you're finding, what you wrote about this concept and this epidemic of isolation.
I'm really glad that you asked about the choice of words epidemic. I thought long and hard before labeling that. And fortunately or unfortunately, there are too many studies, longitudinal, not only in the U.S., but actually from other places in the world, that show that the younger the generation, the greater the feelings of social isolation. And that was a shock to me. It was an alarm. And if you extrapolate, if you're feeling lonely, have a reduced number of friends at the age of 13 or 14, and you look at the health consequences and extrapolate that out over decades, well, aside from the sheer pain of loneliness at any age, there are real health risks and real societal consequences that go along with that.
This is not all Apple's fault, correct?
No. Technology can be a bridge or a barrier. In fairness, I think that we're all learning as we go how to live with technology being so much a part of our everyday lives. So how do we get through uncertainty? How do we navigate uncertainty? I think it's really through more intergenerational, organic, meaning not the one-off, let's have a nice day at the nursing home, but organic meetings where there's reciprocal sharing and reciprocal curiosity and also reciprocal forgiveness.
What do we mean by reciprocal forgiveness? That's a nice little thing you dangled out there. So let me take the hook. What do you mean by reciprocal forgiveness?
It's become pretty clear to me that so often there are generational misunderstandings. Somebody might use an offensive phrase about someone's sexuality or ethnicity. And rather than immediately begin with an attack, although it is, you know, offensive, very often a person of a certain age may not realize that he or she is using language that's hurtful. So take a step back and ask that individual, tell me, I'm curious, what makes you say what you just did? And learn a little bit about the experience that informed that person's worldview. Then, if it's possible, try to have them relate to some time when they were misunderstood. As an example, I remember when somebody first called me sir, I looked over my shoulder and was looking for my father, or right, said, right. Would you like the seat on this bus? And I, again, looked around and I thought, oh, they really are talking to me. Right. So if you can get people just to pull back and look at somebody else's perspective without immediate judgment, better chance for reciprocal forgiveness and understanding.
What do you think is the challenge to most? Because, I mean, you worked in congregations. I spent most of my career working in and with congregations. But yet there's still this, as you point out, and as many commentators have pointed out, this silo mentality. What do you think now with the rapid shift in affiliation rates within congregations is one of the ways to bridge to paraphrase the title of your book, to bridge these generational gaps? It's just not, like you said, one-offs. But we don't see a huge amount, unless, and in your research, I'd love to know if you do, because you consult with congregations, you work with congregations and organizations in the community. We don't see a tremendous amount of mentoring programs, do we, where we link these generations?
No, we don't. And now you also left some tantalizing bait on the
hook. For it, babe.
Listen, with a name like Herring, when you see bait, that's exactly what you do.
Nothing like the first rabbinic pun. very, very good at about the 14-minute mark. Very good.
So I like to look at budgets, first of all. And budgets are really a projection of values and numbers. And I mentioned before, we've done a great job at atomizing the family into different age cohorts. Have you ever seen an intergenerational committee, even ad hoc, around one issue? This is just an example. How many congregations might be working on social justice? What would happen if you had everywhere from the teens to the seniors together in conversation? Got to be facilitated, because here's another thing that's important to know. This is a culture change from moving to a multi-generational mindset to an intergenerational mindset. And I don't recommend that without facilitation that you just put people together in a room and expect things to happen. But one reason is that we haven't had so many generations. The second reason, as we know, is the focus tends to be on the young, when we're not harvesting the wisdom of those who have experience. And I think a third one is that there are so many other isms that congregations are really working on right now, that the issue of age segregation has somehow slipped under the radar scope.
these generations that you're walking us through in connecting generations, bridging the boomer, Gen X, and millennial divide, I got to ask you, a lot of the writing and the book does focus on the boomer, our generation, and the millennials. Just riff a little bit, if you would, on where you see in your work and in your consultations with congregations and organizations, because this is where my kids are in this Gen X. Are they sort of like a lost generation?
I have real empathy for them, because I think that that's another example of how we have overlooked. I don't like to talk about people's resources. People are more dignified than that, but they're in positions of leadership right now. And they also remember a kind of early or pre-digital age, but had to quickly become native when it came to digital life. I think that they are a tremendous resource that is being underutilized, overlooked, for being part of that generational connection.
It's almost like we're of the, just to give an analogy, this just came into my head, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, with Isaac sort of like being this bridge generation that doesn't get a lot of press, even though it's very, very, very instrumental. And here you have the Gen Xers being this bridging between the boomers who got a lot of publicity and the millennials that are eating up the publicity, both generations being perceived as change agents in different ways. And then you have these people 35 to 45, 50 years of age, Gen Xers, who they're there. And as you say, they're now moving into positions of power. Their children are being bar bat mitzvah. They're facing the economic crunch. And is that an image? Is that an analogy that sort of like rings true in your work, in your research?
Very much so. And I guess you now bring up some interesting text questions. You know, I don't think that we should use the Bible as a proof text for some, you know, management principle or social issue, but sometimes it does provide context. And of course, that's one of the lenses through which I look at this issue, not in the book, but hopefully down the road. So we talk about the Levitical service, and there's a dispute whether it doesn't begin at age 25 or 30, mandatory retirement at 50. And the idea is that the 50-year-olds mentored, all right, those who are 50 and under, those who are active in service, those who are coming into service. And I would like to see Gen X really, you know, be more empowered, feel more empowered, take more power if you have to. Because they can be incredibly helpful.
Do you have a feeling in your work in analyzing this generational construct that our generation, the baby boom generation, despite all the things that we may say, really is having a lot of difficulty letting go to leadership, power, and influence?
I would say that that's putting it kindly.
Well, I feel kind today. What can I tell you?
So I asked millennials, when you hear the word boomer, what image comes to mind? And here's what I heard from them. Obsessed with work, goal-driven, no fun to be with, tough and tenacious, entitled, right? No. Just because you're older, it means you know more and therefore assume that you should be in charge. Then I ask boomers, when you hear the word millennial, what image comes to mind? Identical question.
Right.
We have a bucket list, we boomers. We know we have to work and we don't have fun until we retire. And millennials are pleasure seekers. They're hedonists. They want to kick the bucket, have fun now. They're apathetic snowflakes, which I found to be a very demeaning term.
Yes. Meaning it is
delicate, gentle,
yes,
unique, you know, want to be CEO on day number two, and entitled. Interesting that both millennials and boomers called the other entitled, but I think they meant something different. for boomers, the entitlement piece of millennials was, how come I'm not in charge already? And for millennials, it was, just because you're a boomer doesn't mean you're entitled to be in charge.
So with this perception that you've studied, you know, talk to me about how you would bridge, again, to channel the book title. How would you bridge this seeming inconsolable difference in view?
I think that congregations, certain nonprofits inside and outside of the Jewish community have a golden opportunity, and they are uniquely poised, again, with a little bit of a culture shift to deal with it. Here are a couple of examples. Congregations, Jewish community centers, have a lot of space that goes underutilized for quite a bit of the week. What would happen if some younger people who are looking for startup space were given rent-free startup space? You know, a congregation might have to be retrofitted and be able to then do their thing, and in return, could receive a mentor from a congregation. Might be incented to give some sort of service back to the congregation on a limited basis. So that would be one simple way. I think that the letting go piece that you accurately put your finger on, if congregations can take on more of a platform mentality, and I wrote about this in my prior book, I think that, and by platform, it means you know your mission, you have your values. If a group of people want to get together and experiment more, bring in almost an incubator mentality into the congregation, then give people the space to try it without judgment again. Let people fail and let their failures become opportunities for teaching and learning to get things right the next time around. So there are so many ways that congregations, even with their limitations, could become that place for intergenerational connection.
I'm wondering if the watchword of the congregation in the future, as we move into this very uncharted world, that the real watchword of the congregation has to be yes. When people come to the rabbi or the president, say, I'd like to do this, I'd like to, instead of saying, well, we'll take it to the committee or write a note or send a note to the automatically the answer is yes, go ahead, but you have to be involved and help do it. We're not going to do it, but yes, do it. And just to see what happens. I mean, it's an interesting idea because I there are some places who do that with very interesting, exciting, creative, and generations working together. Just a thought.
I think that I really love what you just said. If our default position was yes, again, that's why being clear on mission and values is really important. But within that, if the default position was, we'd love for you to try it, wouldn't that make a difference?
It'd be kind of exciting, I think. We're speaking with Rabbi Chaim Herring, the author of Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim, the contact information, suppose somebody wants to get a hold of you, perhaps bring you into their community, because I know you do tremendous amount of consulting and working with organizations and congregations. How do they do that?
www.chaimherring, chaimherring.com. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or call me at 612-859-1650.
In the book, you talk about this dichotomy. I think the phrase you use is pathways versus ladders. What does that mean? What does that mean?
If you're a boomer, and maybe this has to do with that letting go piece, generally, it was pretty clear after high school that you would climb a ladder of achievements until you reached a certain point. It might be through manufacturing, the military, college, and then up the professional career. And then you would get your golden watch at retirement, signaling that you now own time instead of you being owned by somebody else's time. But millennials, who really are the first generation to grow up in this purely digital world, the lack of boundaries on the web sort of flowed back into their lives. So for them, it's about pathways and networks. And I want to be more specific about that. How can you ask a millennial, and let's think about Gen Z, which they're the generation below, they're different in many ways than millennials, but how can you ask a millennial, what do you want to do for the rest of your life or even for 10 years, when the job that they have 3 years from now may not even exist yet? And not only that, this ongoing churn in the economy, right? Can you really expect them to be committed in the same way, even if they found something that they like, when many of them have watched their parents downsized, outsourced, humiliated by employers? So yeah, it's going to take more time because the economy has changed and they watched what happens when you commit to something that you really don't feel a lot of meaning in.
So you, as the book moves on, the and this idea of various pathways, and by the way, I'm seeing this even with our generation as I go around. There are more and more boomers who are very much open now in this stage of our life to exploring and experimenting with a variety of different pathways to meaning and even Jewish identity than we were. When we were in our career building, family building stage. It's almost like being given the freedom to, and I think that's part of the reason why there are so many boomers rushing to do serious study and serious Jewish study, because they're looking for different, very, very, very different pathways, which may be an indictment of the established pathway that they took. I don't know. I kind of think part of it is. You write, as the book moves on, about a variety of different little things that I've written down here. And I just wanted to, before we start running out of time, just want to pick your brain on what you mean by one of them, just-in-time conversations. What that the phrase that struck me, what is that?
Because we've retreated into our generational silos, it usually takes some sort of negative trigger event with an elderly parent or adult family member to begin a conversation that could have happened earlier when there was no fender bender, let's say, for example, or no question about needing to move into a different kind of facility because a parent fell. But here's the other thing that's really different this time. We're not in a sandwich generation. That worked in the 80s when there were fewer generations. It's more like a submarine. And at different points along the generational spectrum, we all move in and out of states of dependence and independence. So you can have somebody who is a millennial living in a parental home, and both parent and child could be seeking a job at the same time. So by opening up conversations about values, about meaning and purpose, before an event occurs, it's much more likely that you can mitigate a crisis from happening because you're already talking as you go along about life changes, not just for the elderly, but what is it like today to be a Gen Z, a millennial, and a Gen X, and to have those conversations.
So are you in favor of like some of the models that, for example, the Conversation Project or other groups, because we're at Jewish Sacred Aging, we're involved in some of these, CTAC, et cetera, really on family meetings or family occasions like a Seder or Thanksgiving dinner when people are together or even the nuclear family is together, to really raise this subject? I mean, to have a conversation that not necessarily end of life, but really the total gestalt of life. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but I would extend it a little bit further. I don't think it should only be families. I think it should be neighborhoods too.
Okay. So what do you mean? A block party?
Well, there are different ways of doing it. So a lot of people use an app like Nextdoor. There are neighborhood associations. There are other ways to organize different groups that are just beginning to spring up that bring people together. Mentoring and volunteering. Here's something else I realized. There are, I think, 720 hours in a month. And even if you're a millennial or a Gen Xer, I bet you could find 5 hours a month to put some time into volunteering and try to make it with someone older. If you're fearful of doing that, find somebody who's already volunteering and go with that individual and get to meet your neighbor in that way.
Mm-hmm. What is this phrase or the word perennials? It comes up towards the end of the book. What did you mean by perennials as opposed to flowers?
Well, you'll appreciate this. I, being from the East Coast, I'm not of the gardening type. And the only time I have used a shovel, unfortunately, has been at a cemetery. But out here in Minnesota, where people do garden, a friend of mine was telling me about his perennials and explaining how each year, I think the top part of the plant dies off, the seeds of that die off form a new variety the next, you know, spring, drawing upon the same root system. And I thought, wow, what a lovely metaphor. I'm not the first to use it. I think I'm the first to use it this way. That's what can be a uniting sort of metaphor that can bring us together. What does each generation hope to do? To relinquish that which has held it back from fulfilling its potential. I think to replant for the future and to retain what has worked. That's discussion worthy. The labels that we have tend to obscure that common perennial task.
One of the interesting things about this book, and I really wanted to ask you to expand on it before we start running out of time, is the end of the book, you have these series of appendices, if that's the right word.
Yes.
Very interesting. Just walk us through very quickly what these are and the motivation for them.
Well, one appendix is a way of saying thank you and sort of lifting up the work of others, those who have been in this field for a long time. And the book is action oriented. So my goal was not only to thank them by highlighting their organizations, but also to give them at least one readers, one resource that they can download, use, connect with, or bring to their own home, family, or community. A second resource, because technology, again, it's not the only issue. It's a part of the issues that we've been discussing. But in some ways, the task of parenting is always the same. It's trying to help children grow within limits and giving them safety and security and help them navigate boundaries. Of course, it's more complicated because we're moving from as Anya Kamenetz has said, I think from a present right now with digital screens to a screenless future. So we're going to need to talk about that. And one of the appendices deals with a family technology action plan. Grandparents need to read that too, not just parents, because grandparenting is different today. And the third one is how to move away from just-in-time conversations to really get people talking more about critical matters around healthcare issues before they become a problem.
Something that I know, I mean, we deal with all the time at Jewish Sacred Aging, that these conversations, which are becoming more essential. So I wanted to make sure that we got to those appendices because they're very, very important and really add a very practical and necessary sort of like coda to the book. Again, we've been talking to Rabbi Chaim Herring, the author of Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide, author, presenter, and futurist. The website, again, Chaim, is what?
www.chaimherring.com.
And again, if you want to, the phone number?
612-859-1650.
Easy last question, softball, easy one. And all of your work and all your consulting and your travel and you're working with congregations and you're working with organizations, you're trying to get them to understand this radical shift now in the American Jewish world. What's the greatest challenge to our congregations, our organizations, our federations?
Trying to calibrate or recalibrate the balance between being the spiritual breaks that give us an opportunity to reflect on all the changes going on, but we need to put our foot on the spiritual accelerator a little bit more. It doesn't have to be either or. Put the entrepreneurial mindset and entrepreneurial pipeline within an existing organization and let them coexist with a little bit of creative tension side by side. Very hard to get people to think in terms of both and.
Is it going to come down to, again, for us to re-energize the spiritual approach to what it means to be alive, regardless of our generation?
It is not the privilege of any single generation or any single individual. It always emerges more clearly when we do it in partnership.
Rabbi Chaim Herring, thank you very much. Chaim, I appreciate it, your time. Good luck with the book and continued success in your work. And thank you for making yourself available here for Seekers of Meaning. I appreciate it very much. Take care.
Richard, thank you for your work. Fantastic.
Thank you. You're welcome. Very much welcome. To all of you, thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com and also invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We appreciate your continued support of our work. And if you'd like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, please go to the website, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate icon at the top of the page. Your support is greatly appreciated. Seekers of Meaning is recorded here at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and is produced by Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.